Joining me now for the August edition of Our Town is Dr. Willie Foster. He's the head of the emergency department at Peace Harbor Hospital, and Jason Hawkins, who is the chief administrative officer at Peace Harbor. Good day to both of you. How's everybody doing?
Well, it's always good to be here. I always like interacting with patients outside of the emergency room.
Yes. Good to see you, George. Yeah, glad to be here.
I thought this would be a good time, you know, to kind of see what happened, you know, in the COVID world. I think that I was under the impression, and maybe wrongly so, that when April came, we might have a little bit of a dust up with things, but I didn't foresee it happening to the level it's happening now. I mean, 400 plus patients in the hospital with COVID and 60, I think, in ICU. Now, I know the hospitals are getting hit heavy right now, but it's not all with COVID. It's got to do with staffing and things like that. Tell me a little bit about, you know, where we've come from April, you know, to the present time and what the expectations were, if there were any.
Well, certainly, you know, there's a new variant out there, and that's going to be probably the ongoing scenario with COVID. There's going to be variants, some that are more infectious, some that are more contagious, or some combination thereof. The particular variant that's out there now is pretty contagious. So even if you've had COVID before, even if you're vaccinated and boosted, there's a possibility that you'll, you know, become positive for COVID, though most of the people that have been vaccinated and boosted aren't that sick with COVID. Still, you know, the majority of people that are sick in the hospital with COVID are not fully vaccinated or boosted, and that is especially true if you're older and have, you know, chronic medical problems.
Right, comorbidities, like you've got, you know, diabetes or overweight or heart condition or something that would keep you from healing faster.
Right.
Yeah. What about the idea of, you know, you talk about the new variant of that. And it seems like we've had, three or four since the original Omicron. We're up to five now. Mm-hmm. How is that? Is that something that it's morphing as it goes, or is it just a whole new variant altogether?
I mean, it's just morphing as it goes. It changes, just like the flu, you know, just like the flu virus that we're used to getting a flu shot for. They kind of predict, how's the virus going to change? Let's try to make a vaccine that matches it. And, you know, this virus is doing the same thing. It's changing. Sometimes those changes are little. Sometimes they're a little bit bigger. And trying to keep up with that, figuring out what vaccine, how can we tweak the vaccine to best match that, you know?
Well, that would be my question. We've got decades of research for the flu virus, so they can usually find something. It may be the next year when they find, you know, that shot that would help that. But how quickly can they do something, you know, with COVID not having all the research that's behind that? Can they tweak it that fast?
They can. I mean, we've learned a tremendous amount in the last couple of years. And, you know, what used to take, you know, months now takes weeks, you know. So, I mean, a tremendous amount of basic science came out of this, you know, COVID, pandemic and stuff. With the flu, if it changes a little bit from year to year, they're pretty good at matching the vaccine to that. It's when it takes a bigger jump that often the vaccine they've developed for the next year doesn't match as well and stuff. And, you know, we'll probably see the same thing with COVID. Some of the changes that COVID makes are going to be a little bit more difficult to get a vaccine to match it. But it's going to be a back and forth between the virus and the medical community and what they can do for vaccines. In terms of treatment, you know, there's new drugs coming online all the time. Some have shown quite a bit of promise. Others haven't turned out to be as grand as we thought, you know.
Now, what about the effects overall in the hospital system, Jason? I know that, you know, statewide we're hearing, you know, staffing shortages and things like that. On a more local level, have we had some of the people moving away from the medical field? Has that caused us any problems here, or are we kind of insulated from that?
Yeah, that's you know, I would just probably reflect back on this. Is the last 12 months have been, you know, two nasty variants, Delta, you know, last fall, and then Omicron really started in December and has ebbed and flowed ever since, you know, the up to the fifth variant. And some really special people working at Peace Harbor and Peace Health Medical Group here that have really have chinned up and really come to work every day, take care of our community. And it's not been easy. And we have for different reasons. Some people have had to leave because family has gotten sick somewhere else and they don't live in Florence. Their family lives in Kansas and they've had to go and help take care of them. Inflation's affecting people, what they can afford to do and what they can't afford to do. And that's collapsing households and people moving sometimes back with other family members to endure some of those challenges. And we've had some folks that were really special to us. They were towards the end of their career, working a few shifts a week, a few shifts a month. And really, with everything kind of going on, they've decided to, you know, kind of hang up their cleats and are decided to move on to some other things. So those folks were really important to us because they brought a lot of wisdom to the table, especially the more senior ones. And they often would cover shifts when someone else wouldn't cover during the holidays. So it's created some challenges from a staffing standpoint. We've had to dip into the temporary traveler pool quite a bit here in Florence and Peace Harbor in particular. Not as much as some of other hospitals. We haven't been as dependent. We've been able to kind of retain a lot of our great people, but we were able to augment them. Right now, we have close to about 15 to 20, about 18 travelers at the hospital right now in different departments, lab and nursing in particular, are those two areas. Where most of our situations have been episodic, where we might have two or three people might get sick or someone's on a leave of some sort and creates some challenges keeping beds open. But generally speaking, we've been able to take care of the community. And when we've not been able to do it locally, we've been able to get them transported to somewhere else. Now, regionally, there's certainly been challenges of the access to beds across the state, across the country. So having patients who need higher level of care and getting them into tertiary care facilities, Portland or Eugene or other places, oftentimes now what used to take a couple hours is now taking, you know, part of a day for that to happen. And really, shout out to our ED, docs, nurses, and ED techs, just really providing great care while they're in those inpatient or ER beds waiting for inpatient care.
Speaking with Jason Hawkins, the CAO at Peace Harbor Hospital, and Dr. Willie Foster, ED Director over Peace Harbor there. Now, in the early stages of COVID, now, two and a half years now we've been looking at this. Because of the situation, because of the infectiousness and the quick, a quick oncoming of this, a lot of patients were being sent to Riverbend, mainly because of room and because of the diagnostics and everything they had there. Is that still happening here locally, or are we keeping more patients here?
Well, as of, I think, within the last month, the decision was made that we would keep some COVID-positive patients at our hospital. As, you know, we said earlier, COVID is going to be a fact of life going forward. There's going to be patients that are COVID-positive, and the idea that all of them needed to go to Riverbend doesn't really hold true anymore. About half the patients that are in the hospital with COVID actually aren't there for their COVID. They came in with a hip fracture. Oh, and you're COVID positive. You really don't have any symptoms. And so the decision has been made that we will keep some COVID positive patients at our hospital. We've set up special rooms that have better isolation. There's policies and procedures. It's really no different than having someone there with the flu, and we've been doing that for years. And so we will be keeping COVID positive patients. If they're critically sick, they're still going to go over to Riverbend, but we do have a policy and procedures in place to keep people here, which is good for our population.
So at what point do you determine the critical nature of their infection? Is it they need a breathing apparatus, or they
certainly
have comorbidities?
Right. Or? Certainly if they were just here and the COVID was, you know, just an incidental finding, we could, you know, readily keep those people here. And a lot would depend on how sick are they. You know, if they just need some oxygen, yeah. But if we're thinking they're going to need, you know, to be intubated, more critically sick, they're probably going over to Riverbend.
But would you look at, like, in other words, for example, I don't know if you can ask these questions. I'm sure you can in a hospital setting, whether they tell you or not. But if someone were to sit there and go, well, I fractured my hip, I have COVID, but I am not vaccinated at all. Would that play into it versus, or would it still be, you know, maybe you're not going to get
it? It might play into it a little bit, but if they had no symptoms, being vaccinated or not vaccinated wouldn't play into it. But if they were sick, but not really sick and unvaccinated, that's the person that potentially could get sicker. So that might play into our decision as to who we kept and who we sent. And even if we did admit somebody here and they got sicker, there's always the option to move them over, you know, if we need to. But I'm sure that as, you know, time goes on, we're going to figure out what's the best patients to keep here with COVID, which ones should we send over to Riverbend. But having that option to keep them here, I think, is good for our community.
Now, Jason, I'm not sure if this is a question for you, or maybe it's just me wanting to get stuff off my chest. But I found that since about April, when the OHA and Lane County Public Health decided to change the way they were reporting things, I, as someone who daily looks at numbers to try to figure out what's going on, have had a problem finding out the proper information, and we're getting less and less information from them. As a hospital administrator, are you Are you feeling that same pinch, or are you getting an information stream that maybe just the general public isn't privy to?
Yeah, I think we've probably always been getting that information ahead of time prior to public health because we were doing a lot of the testing. We could tell when the testing was surging, when the drive-through clinic was busy, you know, was going around the corner of the building. There was a lot of concern in the community. People wanted to know. I think we always have to be careful that testing doesn't drive everything. It's admissions, hospital admissions for COVID. For a while, testing, you know, we've learned throughout this for the last 2.5 years, and we're adapting. And we're adapting with science, we're adapting with knowledge and experience, and we're finding that testing is important, but it's not the only thing we need to know. So we're watching the rate of hospitalization is probably the single biggest thing. We still know that vaccinating is still really, really important, and we still know that masking is really, really important. It's important if you think you're going to a venue and, you know, you're in a crowded situation, pull out your mask. If you think you want to bring that, that's probably a smart thing to do. If you think you've been exposed to somebody else, you maybe should be wearing a mask before you maybe infect somebody else. So I think just being good stewards that way is always important to do. And I think masking being somewhat optional in some areas, I think we have a responsibility to think about that a little bit more.
Yeah, maybe put them on a little bit more, especially in, you know, closed spaces and stuff.
For sure.
And certainly home testing has changed things, you know, before.
Well, yeah, because, yeah. You know, some people go, oh, well, I got COVID, but I'm not telling anybody. I'm just sitting at home. You know, we don't know what the numbers are. A little bit more about vaccinations, and not necessarily about the changing and the adapting to the COVID, but what about, for example, I received Johnson & Johnson, and then I got the booster. Now, for someone like me, do we know how long to go before we decide we might need another booster? Can I get a different type of booster? What should we do as far as how our immunity goes with this? Do we even know yet?
Well, I mean, I'm sure.
And is there a danger to getting another booster?
I don't think there's a danger to getting another booster. Obviously, you don't want to be getting a booster every week, you know.
Right.
But the idea of getting a booster after a certain period of time, and every patient's going to be, you know, different. Some people's immunity might wane within a couple of months. Others would have a very good immunity still 6 months later. And that's true with probably most infectious diseases and vaccinations. Some people have a better response that lasts longer. All the stuff I have seen basically says mixing and matching vaccines is totally fine at this point. Initially, you know, we weren't sure, but as more studies were done, getting whatever vaccine is available doesn't really make a difference as to what you had before. Being an ER doc, I'm not involved in primary care, so I'm not sure what the criteria is for when you're supposed to get a second, you know, booster, you know, age and how many months and so on. But I understand that a second booster is indicated for, you know, a certain percentage of the population now.
Mm-hmm. Speaking with Jason Hawkins and Dr. Willie Foster at Peace Harbor Hospital, and 2.5 years ago, we didn't know what the word COVID was. You know, we thought over time, maybe it would dissipate, maybe it would settle down. We're still kind of impacted by it. Looking forward, what are some of the challenges we're facing? I mean, obviously staffing is a big one.
Yeah, so yeah, absolutely. We talked about it a little earlier. Staffing is a challenge going forward. We're working on different things, you know, how do you keep the ones you have? Because we love working with them, love taking care of our community and what incentives we can put in place. We've had some creative incentives for those kind of things. Also have developed recently a program with Lane Community College and Sawyer Slough School District for CNA1s and then in turn into CNA2s. So we've had our first cohort go through, and next year we have about a dozen or so students going to be coming through that. Those are critically important positions for us, and it's also a bit of how people get their start in healthcare, and then they can take advantage of tuition reimbursement and loan programs and things like that within Peace Health. The other thing that Ruth Frank, our chief nursing officer, is also working on is having RN do clinical rotations here, both for Lane Community College, and also we have 3 caregivers that are currently attending Southwest Community College down in the Bay Area, and having them do their clinical rotations back here. Because they really great to take people that are currently working at Peace Harbor and then trying to further the education and then have them come back and do those clinical rotations. And Ruth is setting up like a 1-year internship program, a paid internship once they start, so that we can make sure they land and hit the ground running. And it helps that they were here to start with. They know the lay of the land, so to speak, and where things are. And so new grads are always a little tough, and new grads are always a little tougher in a rural area. But having them already be employed at Peace Harbor in another capacity is a really big leg up on everything for that. So it's really tough sledding right now. Inflation's tough. People are making adjustments for that. But I think Peace Harbor is a great place to work. Florence is a great place to live. And I think
if they're already working and living here, that's even more helpful.
It certainly is, for sure.
How is the youth response to it? I see you say you got about a dozen coming out, so it must be. I'm sure they're not all youth, but I mean,
these are all students. So I think what's happening is the youth that are young adults that are looking at this are looking around and saying, you know what, I want to contribute and I want to make a difference. They've seen what's happened in the last 2.5 years. They've seen the need and the caring that has happened by our nurses and our physicians and other folks that are in healthcare, whether it's been locally or on TV, and they're feeling called to that. And it's really, really neat to see that type of people say, you know what, I could do another type of career, but this is what I feel like I'm being called to do. And it's really been neat to watch that happen.
And there's certainly been no downturn in terms of med school applications, nursing school applications. You know, I mean, there hasn't been any decrease in that. It's still pretty competitive to get into med school and nursing school.
Well, you know, you hear a lot on the news about how the younger generation, you know, they don't really have a focus. They don't really know what they want to do. And this is sort of like, well, this has given a lot of them, you know, an understanding and a purpose of what they do want to do. So in some ways, I mean, it's sort of been a good thing because mm-hmm. we've always needed people in healthcare, you know, to do that. Dr. Foster, let's talk about from here forward. Do we know anything about the virus now that's going to help us, you know, keep it at bay better as we move on down the road? What's the future of healthcare as it pertains to the virus per se?
Well, I think it's continuing to do surveillance of what, you know, variant is out there and tweaking our vaccines, continuing to work on, you know, new drugs to, you know, treat it. We've reached the point where COVID, to a large extent, is a pretty treatable disease for many people. Yes, there are still people dying from it. Well, we need to remember in a normal year, you know, thousands of people die from the flu, you know. Mm-hmm. We kind of forget that. And COVID might be a little bit worse than the typical flu on an ongoing basis. But I think it's going to be, you know, we've learned to live with it in terms of both the vaccination to try to prevent it or lessen its severity and also treatments.
How does the human body adapt to viruses and things like that? Because I know there's you know, some indication that, you know, we develop sort of self-immunity over things. How does that process work, if you know or can explain a little bit about?
Well, I mean, whether you get the virus as a disease, your body mounts an immune response, you know, through antibodies and T cells and all these different parts of our immune system. And so when you get a vaccine, we're kind of giving you something. We're giving you something to stimulate that same process without giving you the full infection. And those probably build together. I mean, if you had a vaccine and then still got COVID, that's going to give you another little boost. A little bit later, you get the latest vaccine that reboosts it, you know. And I think that's the best way to avoid getting COVID that's going to make you sick and potentially kill you.
So if there were good news to come out of this, that might be one of the things with getting the shot and you know, getting an immunity and working down the road, maybe we could see a little bit ease on this at some point?
Or? Right. I mean, I think that ultimately it will move closer to being like the flu, and there will still be people that get pretty sick with it. But, you know, I think it's not going to be the pandemic that we've had.
Just an endemic.
It will be endemic. It will be here. Yeah. Some seasons a little bit worse than others, you know.
All right, to finish up, is there anything that would be important to discuss? Jason, do you have anything that you want to...
Yeah, I think it's just really important. We've talked a lot about COVID in the last 2.5 years, but we'd be remiss if we didn't share that along the way, we never took our eye off the ball. Our quality is still very good. Quality metrics are really good, and we still provided all the other levels of care. We're still delivering babies, still doing orthopedic surgeries, general surgeries. We've had some episodic issues where maybe patients have COVID and surgeries get rescheduled, or you know, because of different mandates from government, we shut down in the beginning of COVID. But along the way, we've been open the whole time, taking care of our community, and just darn proud of our staff, darn proud of the doctors and all the caregivers. They're a very special group, and really proud to work with all of them.
Okay, so you brought up something there. Now I have to go back to Dr. Foster. Now, if someone is, like, does break a hip and is positive, can they still do the surgeries now? Is that something you do, or do you have to wait till they're negative to go?
It kind of depends on what the surgery is and how urgent it is and how symptomatic they are from COVID. But yes, we have taken patients to the operating room that needed to have something done and were COVID positive. Right. If they had a routine scheduled, you know, hip replacement or knee scope, and we are still testing all those people beforehand, and they tested positive, we would, you know, delay that because it's an elective, you know, procedure. Mm-hmm. But certainly if somebody needs the operation, then being COVID positive isn't going to stop that. Now, if they're critically ill with COVID and need an operation, then you're balancing, you know, several different things there.
Okay, so last thing here, because I know people are out there freaking out now because they're hearing all these stories on television and on radio and stuff like that about monkeypox. What level of concern do we need to be at? Is it something that is deadly, or is it?
I mean, certainly it can be a serious disease. There are, you know, there are some medicines that can treat it, but compared to, let's say, COVID, it's much harder to get. And, you know, it needs to be direct skin-to-skin contact. You know, if you're in somebody's presence, high risk is considered 3 hours. It's not walking by and somebody, you know, coughing once. It's a harder virus to check, to catch, but it is out there. There are cases in Lane County, and we're not sure where this is headed. You know, is it going to remain just a few cases? Is there going to be a spike? I don't think it's going to be anywhere near any of the spikes we've seen from COVID, just due to the nature of the virus and how it spread.
Okay. Yeah, I would just add the thing that that we're all learning from it is the fact that you could be contagious, infectious for 2 to 4 weeks. So, you know, that could disrupt, you know, jobs, could disrupt workforce, things like that. And a lot of people aren't feeling well. They may not be sick enough to be admitted, but they're going to be seeking care and different levels, dermatology care, primary care, ER care, and then be potentially out of work for a little while. Mm-hmm. So that's a piece that we're kind of watching too, what kind of impact that has. Right now, someone gets COVID, they're out somewhere, you know, 6, 7 days, maybe 10 days, depending on the circumstances. So,
well, great information. Thank you both for being here. And, you know, let's... I don't want to have to do this again, but I certainly enjoy having you here. So if we have to, it'd be a great time. Thank you both.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up on Our Town, Ron Moore, who is the president and CEO of Hoagland Properties, talking about the Quince Street Hotel.